Okay, name your favorite Christmas food.
Gingerbread.
Name your favorite Christmas song.
Silent Night.
Name your favorite Christmas drink.
Eggnog.
Name your favorite Christmas friend.
Aw, my wife, Sue.
Oh, okay. Name your favorite male Christmas friend.
Yes, that would be Howard. You know, he wassails and dances around the tree.
Okay, then name your favorite male friend who you podcast with.
Easy, Jake. Remember his Dominic the Donkey? It was on fire.
All right. Then name your favorite male friend who you podcast with who isn't Jake.
I can't. There's only the three of us.
Name your favorite male friend who you podcast with who is sitting in front of you right now.
Oh, you?
I might act tough, but I got a lot of feelings, and you hurt damn near every one of them.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! God is helping!
We are the wild and crazy guys!
But they're both festive, aren't they?
We are the festive foreign film fans. Oh, Mark, I'm so excited. Guess what?
What?
Jake's still here.
Oh, thank God.
I was afraid he'd be out trying to make number two.
Oh. Make number two.
I mean, I guess that wasn't the right way to say that. I meant his next child.
Oh, yeah. Yes, well.
His nights are too busy right now, just getting up. But I don't like to kick off an episode with some controversy, but it was kind of interesting, this movie, and I know you're going to get into it. We won't talk about the details of the movie until you go, but I know that we're 56 episodes in, and we haven't really resolved, or the first episode we might have addressed this question, or maybe it was the fourth one or something. What is a Christmas movie? And I thought you came up with a really good test if you need Christmas for it to happen. And so, you know, movie focus on Christmas, you know, you might have trees, carols, right. Snow, a heartwarming lesson, right?
Yes.
Importance of family, maybe right. About being generous. And it's something that you wouldn't watch during the rest of the year. This is just a Christmas movie, and you wouldn't watch it in the summer like we would.
So you're saying most normal people
wouldn't. Most normal people wouldn't watch it.
Because in July, I've watched several Christmas movies, and I think you and I talked about this. I watch Christmas movies and listen to Christmas songs when I need to uplift myself. Some people may meditate. Some people may go for a walk or a bike ride. I find some of my favorite Christmas movies or Christmas songs, and I play them. I feel a hell of a lot better.
I love that thought. I don't think I do it to lift my mood. Like, I'll listen to a lot of Christmas podcasts, or lately, because it's summer, and especially having Christmas in July, I put together a playlist of tropical Christmas movies because it goes with the tiki bar. Those I really love to find because they have a lot of really good ones with steel drums stuff, and they're so fun to listen to in the summer.
So back to your topic. So normal people don't normally watch Christmas movies.
Or they might
say,
why am I watching this Christmas movie in July?
It's 90 degrees out. It's humid.
It also carries over into this question with some of our Hollywood favorites. You know, my favorite Christmas movie is It's a Wonderful Life. But I have heard debates on Christmas podcasts whether that is a Christmas movie, because they say, look, there's nothing Christmassy about it until the very end, right? Mm. Most of the film occurs outside of Christmas. The plot has nothing to do with Christmas. And they'll say it's really more just about George Bailey and what the country's going through with the war mm-hmm. and banking and housing and the depression. So if we took your test and might say, well, if we remove Christmas from it, do we get the same film? So does that mean it's not a Christmas movie?
So first of all, anybody who wants to debate this with me, I don't want to talk to you because you're a moron.
Ooh. Mark is surfacing.
No, I get what you're saying a little bit, but think about that movie specifically. Now, if you talked about Die Hard, okay, I can go with you a little bit, but It's a Wonderful Life. You take away the last 15 minutes of the movie, you have no movie. The whole movie is built up about good and evil and how to learn how to stay on the right path. I get what you're saying, though. Like, I think it's fair to say it is sort of like a biography of George Bailey for most of it.
Well, what's interesting is there's no Santa, elves, none of that. But those themes of redemption and generosity and how you live your life, those are the ones that resonate after the 80 years it's been. And those are really, those are the themes of Christmas. But it raises this whole question, and we'll get into it with this movie, because this movie was recommended as a Christmas movie. And the first time I watched it, I thought, is this a Christmas movie? Mm. And it raised this whole question, because I've heard this term used, a Christmas adjacent movie. Mm. And I feel like maybe that's what tonight is. Is it a Christmas adjacent movie versus a Christmas movie? Okay, we got this concept, Christmas adjacent, but what's the definition? I mean, how do you delineate a Christmas movie from a Christmas adjacent movie? There's no clear consensus. And I thought, I can be an overzealous holiday fanatic. You're a hardcore movie enthusiast. Maybe we can set the record straight. Maybe we are the two people that can resolve this issue. Because we know that a Christmas-adjacent movie, you think about it, doesn't have to meet the strict standards of a Christmas movie. But it should have some elements, like It's a Wonderful Life. The themes are really the themes of Christmas. They may not fully take place at Christmas time, but they ought to reference it. Even Die Hard, there were some Christmas references.
They're there for a Christmas party.
So you may not have a lot of decorations or customs, but the themes, family, generosity, selflessness, kind of like you said, a Christmas Jason movie as a film doesn't need Christmas to function.
Right.
And the plot doesn't need to directly address the holiday. Doesn't have to have wintry scenes and presents, but positive character development. Mm. So, I mean, what do you think of this concept of Christmas movie versus Christmas adjacent movie?
Well, I get it. I think there is an emotional reaction that you have to movies that could also make it feel like a Christmas movie too, right? It doesn't necessarily have to have the presence of Christmas, but I think there's things we see and there's an emotion. Like, what do you feel at Christmas? You feel connection to family. You feel lighthearted. You see people interacting with each other in a different way than they normally do. So I think a Christmas adjacent movie can coexist with Christmas movies, but defining it, I think you're on the right track to say it's eliciting some kind of character development or something has happened during the brief Christmas interlude that impact the characters in it. I don't know. I've never heard of Christmas adjacent. Die Hard comes to mind really quicker than It's a Wonderful Life as a Christmas adjacent. I'm trying to think if there's others.
Well, I'll tell you, here's complete heresy. The Christmas Carol. Couldn't you argue, just like It's a Wonderful Life, it is about this miserly guy who has ghosts visit him and challenge him about how he's lived his life. Not necessarily how he's been about Christmas, but just about how he's lived his life and how he should live it differently.
Yeah.
There are elements of Christmas that we see throughout it, but is Christmas central to that story?
Aren't the ghosts of Christmas present, past, and future?
I know, they're in their name. I know, it's in their name. And I guess it's the Christmas holiday.
Right.
We go to Fezziwigs, it's a Christmas party. But it's funny because they don't necessarily play up the Christmas angle.
But they're playing up what happens around Christmas a little bit more. I'm a little worried about, and I don't know who you are and what you've done with my friend Bob.
Well, let's put it on hold. Let's talk about at the end of your, when you tell us about the movie, because I'll be curious what your feeling is about this movie. is this a Christmas movie? And I'm holding back until I'll tell you my decision.
I guess the other thing, too, just to say, we're almost becoming academics. That's weird, huh?
I know, remember, like film academics. Yeah.
But I remember a couple of movies ago, and I not remember what it's called, but it was a movie that had all kind of Christmas things in it. And they're celebrating Christmas Eve. And there's just a lot of hatred amongst the family. It's where the dad is dating the girlfriend of the son. I said it was a Christmas movie. And you said no because it was too many dark topics.
Yes.
So even all the elements of Christmas with the trees.
We're in there, yes.
But you said no. And I think, I'm not going to put words in it, but I think it was about the emotional attachment to like what was being discussed.
And we could say the same for the New Zealand film. That upset me too.
True.
It was too much drama for a Christmas movie. So,
oh my God, we're going to have to go back and redo all 50-some episodes.
With this new test.
Maybe we should talk about trivia from last time.
Yes, because our stickers, they're glossy, they're eager, melty. And they've been dying to get around. They want to move to their new owners. So the question was, the serious special forces in Greenland, what was the unique way for how they got around Greenland? When you asked a question, which was good to clarify, when I said Sirius, like the star, S-I-R-I-U-S, you know what that star is called, right? It's the dog star.
No, is that what that's called?
Yeah, Sirius is the dog star.
Oh.
Yes.
I thought that was called the North Star.
So what they use is dog sleds. It's the only military unit in the world. They have such an unforgiving border there in Greenland, in some of the coldest and most remote regions, that they use dog sleds.
Wow.
Isn't that awesome?
That's really cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. I'd like to take a ride.
That would be so cool.
Let's shrug off this bitter cold. Oh. Head south to what is the longest country on Earth. Again, something that's a trivia I didn't know. We'll give you a comparison later on. It's full of contrast. It has the driest desert in the north, and it has internal ice in the south. And they even claim a piece of the Antarctic. We are going to Chile.
Chile.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
The movie tonight came out in 2009. It was called La Nana, or The Maid. Really, there's two main actresses in it. One is Catalina Savarda, who plays Raquel. Catalina is a Chilean film, stage, and television actress. She's best known to international audiences for her role in this film, again, which is an award winner, for which she received several awards and nominations. Her dad was a Chilean writer who had to live in exile in Europe after a CIA-backed coup toppled the government in 1973.
Gosh, I thought we left all the bad U.S. stuff in the Greenland episode.
Catalina appeared in soap operas, sitcoms, and one of the most successful Chilean films ever shown in the United States.
So, Mark, wasn't she great to hate in this movie?
Oh, you hated her?
Well, I didn't hate her, but she was easy to dislike.
The other person who plays Lucy is Mariana Loyola. Mariana Loyola was born in Chile and has won her acclaim for performances in the movies like Cachimba and Rara. She earned Best Actress honors from the Chilean Arts and Entertainment Critics Award, but she also is best known for her Chilean television roles playing Soria Salcida on Machos, and Mary on Mary and Mike. She's been married to a Chilean actor, Rodrigo Pardo, since 2011.
Don't you want to see her as Soraya Salcido on Machos?
Exactly. Gosh, La Nana, it's a very interesting film. Raquel, she's been working for the same family for 20 years.
Yeah.
She is very integrated in the family. At the beginning of the movie, she's doing her dutiful part of getting dinner ready, and we come to learn that it's her birthday. And so the mom of the house gathers and distributes presents for the kids to give to her, and they invite her to come in, but she sort of doesn't want to come in and be a part of the family. I mean, I think, I tell you what, why I love her so much is I think she got her station in life. I think the family loved her in their own way, but it was a service-based love.
Yep.
So I think they felt like she was a part of the family. As we learn throughout the film, I don't think she ever felt like she was in the family.
That is true. I will say she was an amazing actress in this. Phenomenal. She really did. She conveyed so much.
Yeah. It's clear in the very beginning that some kids like her. Lucas is her favorite. The mom tells her that Lucas is her favorite. Sounds like they're very close. There's an older sister, Camilla, who is, you know, probably in the teenage, high schoolish, early college age. For some reason, Raquel and her don't get along. Raquel doesn't like her. In fact, Raquel goes out of her way to be mean to her, which is maybe why you were put off a little bit by her. But I think as Raquel is serving the family, I feel like she was loyal, dutiful to them. And I think when they start talking to Raquel about, hey, we might need someone to come on and help you, she's actually threatened by that, of course, because that means you're not as a value. You never get full resolution, I think, in the movie as to, was the mom and the family trying to get her help because they were worried about her or because they wanted to replace her?
I think that's a question that's posed.
Yeah.
And they don't want to answer. You have to,
sort of have to fill it in. So they go through this whole process too, of where they bring on a new maid named Mercedes, and Raquel goes out of her way to, and she's a younger girl and she's very happy and she's getting along with Camilla right away, the daughter. Camilla gets a little cat from her boyfriend, and Mercedes is like, oh, it's so nice, I'll take care of it. You know, meanwhile, Raquel is like, we're not taking care of that thing. But
now you are sensitizing me to the fact, and I think about it, I kept thinking, oh, she's so immature, the stuff that she does.
Yeah.
But what I do realize is, in some ways, her role, her position has kept her immature. I think she's always been kept in this box.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, everything is regimented, right?
Yeah.
I do this on this day. I do that on that day. I mean, as we learn and go through the movie, we realized she hasn't seen her mom in years. She's never been married.
Yep.
Never had, as far as we know, someone significant in her life. So, for 20 years, she's lived in a single room with a shower and stuff, but she's lived with the family. The mom is in business. The dad is an educator. I think as Mercedes comes in, she does everything she can. She takes the cat that Camilla loves and Mercedes is supposed to be taking care of, and she hides it. And she puts it right outside the property line just to get back at Mercedes, as well as to get at Camilla, too. They bring a different person, Lucy, to come in and help her. And each person is one after another, kind of threatening her position. And she's getting angrier and angrier with the family. In fact, Luke is her favorite. Let's just say Lucas likes to pleasure himself in the bedsheets. And in the beginning of the movie, as she's cleaning them, she sort of smirks and sort of like blushes at the fact of what's happening.
Yeah, but he's reaching that age.
Yeah, he's just reaching that age. And again, she does like him the most. But as she feels more and more threatened by what's going on, she actually even kind of betrays him and tells the mom, I'm sick and tired of washing his bed sheets every night. And the mom comes in and starts, son, it's time to have a little talk. It probably should be with your father. And he is mortified, right? He is absolutely mortified. Mercedes ends up, I'm out of here. I'm not going to do anything with her. Actually, before Lucy, they bring in Sonia, who's this older, gruffer military who really is trying not to take any shit from Raquel, pushes back on her, kind of gets into a couple tussles with her. Well, when Sonia goes out to do something outside, Raquel locks her out of the house. And so this older woman climbs up to the top of the...
That was so funny.
Oh my God. She's on top of their villa.
Yeah.
And sure enough, she falls off the roof. She can't get back in the house. The dinner burns. They couldn't eat that night. She has cuts and bruises all over. And then Sonia's beaten down. And so she quits.
Yep.
So now you have two maids down and then they hire Lucy. So the first one was kind of young and naive. The next one was sort of this battle axe, who's, like you said, very straight militaristic type person. Well, now they hire Lucy, and Lucy's sort of this upbeat person.
Yeah.
In fact, when the family's away, she's out there nude sunbathing.
Well, remember, Raquel locks her out of the house.
Yeah.
And how does she like combat it? She takes off all
her clothes. Yeah. Is out there just sort of sunbathing herself. So I think Raquel is sort of kind of curious about this Lucy because she's not naive. She's kind of have this very positive, happy-go-lucky beat to her.
And you can't help but love Luce, just only because you saw all the tricks that Raquel has pulled on the other ones that have worked.
Yeah.
They're not working with her because she's fun.
She even asks the mom if it's okay if she runs at night, and Raquel is sort of asking her, like, where are you going? No, where'd you come from? She went for a run in the morning. She's like, oh, well, it wasn't my turn for breakfast today, so I went for a run. And she's like, why would you go running? Right? Like, what is that concept? And I think Raquel is seeing Lucy as this different type of person. And I think Lucy is really trying to befriend Raquel quite a bit. We also learned one of the reasons why they're replacing her is Raquel has had dizzy spells.
Yeah.
Her health is failing. And in fact, soon after Lucy comes, Raquel has a really serious episode where she's passed out, and then they take her to the hospital, and Raquel is put in bed for a couple weeks. In the meantime, Lucy's doing what she has to do in the house, but she's also very sincerely starting to come close to Raquel.
Yeah. And I think care for her.
Care for her and be concerned about her. Every time one of the other maids would use the bathroom or take a shower, Raquel would go in and sanitize it all over. And when she tries to do it after Lucy, Lucy grabs her like, what are you doing? You don't have to do that. And just sort of tenderly holds her, just sort of comforts her and just like, stop, right?
Yeah, relax.
Like, relax, you're over the top. And so Raquel gets invited by Lucy to go to Lucy's family in another town to visit for Christmas. I said Christmas.
Yes.
So she invites him over. And it's interesting is that Raquel has not been home to see her mother in Christmas for years. But somehow, like through Lucy's positive attitude, positive energy, she decides to go with Lucy to her family's villa. Has a wonderful, wonderful time. Is having a nice dinner.
You can just see it on her. She looks completely different.
Completely different. Even being not dressed in her maid outfit, she has a nice dinner. Lucy's uncle, Eric, putting on the moves on Raquel. And Raquel's like, you know, I know what you're doing. And actually, he does seduce her. And it looks like they're about to be intimate. And then Raquel says, no, I can't do it. I think what's implied there, what I took away, is she's probably a virgin.
Yeah. Right. That's exactly what I took.
So she's had no intimacy in those 20 years. And that's where I just fell in love with her. Mm-hmm. Like, I just felt like, you know what? She is being real about her station in life, at least how she perceives it to be. I'm here to serve. I have nothing beyond it. But Lucy does come in and starts to maybe change her mind a little bit, open her up a little bit. And so Raquel is starting to sort of evolve into this different person. And then Lucy, one night they're talking about it, and Raquel was questioning her, what's your plans for life? Are you going to be here for 20 years like me? And Lucy's like, no. She's like, yeah, I'm looking here just to make money, right? And so after they come back from the Christmas holiday, Lucy tells Raquel, I miss my family too much. I'm going home. What you think about it, Raquel has spent 20 years away from her family. I'm sure she's seen them, but she's been devoted to this family.
Right.
And Lucy, after maybe a couple months, says, you know, gosh, I miss my family. I'm leaving. And so Lucy is obviously this self-realized type of person. But before she leaves, they have a big birthday party for Lucy. Raquel, which I think is kind of funny, Raquel gives her the sweater that the mom had given Raquel the year before. The mom sort of looks side-eyes at her a little
like
bit.
Like she do. What is great about that scene, all that building up, is that the other two, she couldn't wait to run off.
Right.
She doesn't want Lucy to go.
She doesn't want to go. Yeah. So now she's torn a little bit. So what's interesting then is after Lucy is leaving, and then Raquel is getting better, physically better. And Raquel comes out with her Walkman on, and the kids asked her where she's going. She says, I'm going for a run. Yeah. So she sort of starts at the end of the film, she's sort of walking and running a little bit. So she's maybe evolving into being a little bit freer, maybe looking at life a little bit differently. One thing that frustrated me about the movie, we never really reconciled why Camilla and Raquel didn't get along.
I know. You almost thought they'd provide an explanation because it didn't make sense. Like, I was thinking, did she feel like a rival with her? Like, the older she got?
Yeah.
And like a female? I didn't know at all. What I did want to say, though, about the scene when she puts the Walkman and goes running, it's subtle. And I love when movies do this. They find a way to show her life vision has changed.
Right.
She's now going out running like Lucy did.
Yeah, no, I agree, Bob. And I just think it's like she had painted a picture of what her life would be as this maid to this family. Like that was her life. Kind of what she did was who she was.
Yeah.
Which I think Lucy's got her to see differently. I don't believe that family truly loved any of those maids.
I agree with you. It was all surface level. Yep. What is stunning to me is you're the movie guy. I'm the holiday guy. Looking at the way we saw this movie, you were much more sensitive to some of the elements of this film.
Yeah.
I was more surface on this. You gave her, Raquel, a lot more credit in the movie in terms of being in that role and growing up in that role and being denied your family. I knew all that, but I kind of was also bugged by, what are you pulling all these stupid little things against the daughter and the other maids?
Was that a festive movie?
So watch the movie. I'm like, wait a minute, is this a Christmas movie? Because Christmas is just at the end. There were some decorations I think you saw in the house, but minimal. Yeah. And I thought that visit home with Lucy's family and spending Christmas with them was a trigger point. Mm-hmm. It changed her entire outlook. It changed her as a person, opened up. She saw opportunities and things that she had been cut herself off from. Yeah. I thought, you know what? This is a Christmas movie. It's a Christmas movie and it is festive because it was pivotal, even though it was minor.
Right.
It was pivotal.
Yeah.
So I said, yes.
I couldn't agree more.
But at first I was like, nah, is it?
Yeah, I think it was. It impacted Raquel directly because she got to experience things she's been missing. And then obviously it impacted Lucy to make then a decision, which then impacted Raquel, that leaving. Like, I miss my family so much. I would love to think in La Nana Part 2 that Raquel is finding love.
Yes, outside. That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
And whatever happens with her and Camilla maybe gets patched up, or better yet, she just leaves.
And you know, this just struck me, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but you could look at the villa, the beautiful, they had a pool, they had a really nice life. And I would say when they go home to Lucy's home, very small, family all gathered around a small table, but laughing, joking, sharing the food. And I was like, I bet that Christmas is way more fun than what that family is experiencing because it was so real.
Yeah. And not to say that that's the family, the host family. It's not that there's not love in the house. But the dad wants to get up from the dinner table as fast as possible to go work on his model ships or to play golf. The mom's busy with her social life and with her mom. It's just different. It's not real. It didn't feel real. It felt genuine. So how did you feel when you watched it?
So I loved Lucy. I loved Lucy's approach to life. I love the fact that Raquel, couldn't beat her down. Yeah. And in fact, she won her over.
Right.
And then the change in her, like when she goes out running, I wanted to cheer.
Yeah.
I felt great.
I did too.
Yeah.
Probably 10 minutes into the movie, I just really connected with Raquel. Like I just thought, you know what? You have painted yourself into a corner, but you are trying to do what you need to do to protect yourself and to protect your life. And so I was very excited for her by the end of the movie. Would you watch this movie again?
I would. I thought it was really well done. I thought her acting was incredible. And it sounds very serious, but there were humorous elements. Oh, and the battles between the maids were really funny.
It was fun to watch. Yeah. I would watch it again as well. And I would recommend someone to watch too. I mean, this is probably from a film making perspective, probably one of the best movies we've seen in our podcast. How do you think they say Merry Christmas in Chile?
Well, I mean, wouldn't they say it in Spanish?
That's what I would say, I think so. But they actually say Felices Pascas.
What? Really?
Yeah. So we know, right? The standard phrase for Merry Christmas is Feliz Navidad. This is what we hear throughout the Spanish-speaking countries and have heard. But in Chile, Pascua is the favored word for Christmas, except Pascua also means Easter in Spanish. It also means Easter in Chile, too. You must figure out how it's being used in the context. I guess it's by the time of year.
Yeah. So you're basically saying Merry Christmas and Happy Easter at the same time.
The traditional greeting was Felices Pascuas, which everyone else in Latin America would say is Happy Easter. There's no really solid research on why Chile decided to use the same word for both holidays. Maybe they just want it to be different. That's what I like. When I read this, I'm like, maybe they just like, you know what? We're just going to have one word for everything.
It's really funny.
It is. But with imports and standardization of greeting cards across the country, with the arrival of stores like JCPenney and Home Depot in Chile, they catered to a regional market. So Navidad became the common phrase using greeting cards and on products because that weren't just for Chile. So they sort of had to adopt a little bit. So I think there's a little bit of revolution, like we're going to be different type of thing.
Well, you know, it reminds me kind of what we were discussing about Greenland and the food and how they want to hang on to their tradition. So Home Depot coming in, they go, well, we can't have Happy Easter just for you guys. So now we have to say Feliz Navidad, which is a shame. I think it's a shame.
It is kind of a shame. The perfect gift, though, in Chile is pronounced Regalo de Pascua. And Santa Claus is known as El Viejito Pascuero.
What? The Easter man?
The Easter man. I don't know.
I thought that was Jesus, but who am I?
Lord, the lightning. Away from me.
Yeah, over on this side.
Says the man who golfs on Good Friday. All right, let's talk about some customs.
Okay.
Santa Claus, we know, is often called Papa Noel through most of Latin America. Again, he's called Viejito Pascuero in Chile. This name originated from a toy store in 1905. The toy store was called Bazar Alemán in Santiago. This store introduced the figure of Santa Claus, where he was not well known when they put him on display in their windows.
Oh.
So they're kind of like, hey, this guy. But their name, they called him, was Viejito Pascuero, was the nickname that the people gave the figure.
That is so funny because they didn't know what to say. They're like, oh, who is that guy?
Easter man. Since Christmas is called Pascua in Chile, they called him Pascuero. And together it translates to Old Man Christmas, not Old Man Easter. He wears a red and white outfit and delivers gifts via windows because there aren't very many chimneys in Chile because it's so damn hot. However, in rural areas, he's pictured as a local rancher riding a llama instead of a reindeer.
Now, that's awesome.
I love it. Over 2 years, we've had llamas, we've had elephants, we had goats.
I wonder if he's wearing like gauchos and... You know, a bolero tie.
Maybe. In Chile, they like to celebrate Christmas with Easter bread. There's one seasonal food staple that is found in almost every home called pan de Pascua. And that's what it's called in Spanish. But this sounds so good. It's a moist and spongy cake made with bold spices like cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, cloves, and sweetened with a little bit of honey. It also has dried candied fruits in it, nuts, almonds, and flavored with rum. So
you know what? It sounds like a fruitcake, only the fruitcake is hard. If only they made it moist and spongy.
It's exactly right. It has a very similar taste to fruitcake. And remember back when we talked about Pantione's?
Yeah.
Very much like a Pantione.
Oh, gosh.
So just their version. And again, like I get this theme of, hey, we're going to adopt some of the Latin America stuff, but we're going to have our own little twist on it.
Yeah, we're going to do it ourselves.
This is one of my favorite things. Chileans will battle the summer heat at Christmas with an incredible holiday drink. And I've actually had this. The most popular is called Cola de Mano or Monkey's Tail. Christmas, it's not complete in Chile without Cola de Mano. And it's sometimes called just Cola Mano. But throughout the holiday season, they'll have this refreshing drink to break the heat. Mm-hmm. It's like a white Russian. It's made with coffee, milk, vanilla, nutmeg, cinnamon, cloves, sugar, and aguardiente, which is really schnapps.
So is it good? It sounds good.
Oh, my God. It's so good. I had it at a hotel downtown one time, and it said special drink was a monkey tail. And I'm like, oh, I got to have that.
Yeah.
It's delicious. Although, you know what, though? I didn't have it during the Christmas season, though. It's in the summer.
Oh, wow.
It's actually a summer drink. There are other versions, but this creamy concoction is on any Chilean Christmas drink menu. There's also a tradition associated where the children leave a piece of the pan de Pascua with a cola de mano for Fajito Pascrero.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, well, it's believed that this will give him enough energy to continue his journey. There's also another drink called Borgana, which is a chilled red wine and strawberries mixed together. It's perfect for the summer. I mean, again, it's very hot during their Christmas, but it's filled with fresh strawberries. It's a little red wine. It sounds so good. I mean, I'm not a big wine drinker, but for that, I think I might try that.
With strawberries in it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then not to leave out white wine drinkers, there's also a drink called Pancha de Chirimoya.
It's doing very well.
Chirimoya is custard apples. Mm-hmm. So it's these apples with white wine and sugar, and it's served chilled, and the amount of sugar and wine varies according to sort of personal preference.
So you got red with strawberries and you got white with apples. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. And then last but not least, there's the Navagado, which is a Chilean drink that is made with red wine with slices of oranges, cinnamon sticks, clove, and sugar. And the name Navagado comes from the swirling motion of the orange slices in the pot, resembling small boats navigating through the wine. Navagado actually translates into navigating. And the last tradition we'll cover is the Pastel de Choclo. Is a beloved Chilean dish that takes center stage, right? It's just a chocolate cake or it's actually known as corn pie or corn cake. It's a baked dish described as a savory corn casserole and a type of shepherd's pie, but sweet corn topping it. It's also made with chocolate too sometimes, but it features a creamy topping made from ground corn, basil, milk, and a touch of butter, which is baked until it's caramelized to a golden brown in the oven.
I love corn casserole. I do.
It can be made with chocolate or it could be made with corn. I love like a corn casserole, like you're saying, nicely browned on the top. Beneath that upper layer is a hearty filling of spiced ground beef or shredded chicken cooked with onions and spices like cumin and paprika and combined with hard-boiled eggs, olives, and raisins to create this delightful mix of sweet and savory tastes.
Wow. That's going to be one I'm going to keep in my back of my head to think about.
It's so good.
I love all those different flavors.
Oh, and it really originated from some of the indigenous people of Chile called Mapuches.
We love the food.
It is the food. You know what, though? They also have music.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
With all that drinking, they better have some music.
They have something to get you moving.
Calurosa Navidad es el sudor que moja nuestros trajes. A ti no nieva nunca.
Caruso Navidad could be my favorite new song. Caruso Navidad translates to Hot Christmas. It's performed by the Hot Santas.
The Hot Santas.
And it's from a Christmas special on the television series called 31 Minutes. You need to watch the YouTube video. The song doesn't do justice without the video, but the 31 Minutes is known for irreverent humor and songs. 31 Minutes is a popular Chilean comedy television series with puppets and a virtual band.
Is there puppets doing the song?
Yeah, think about like ugly, no, I shouldn't say ugly, just a step or two down from Muppets.
Oh.
Like they're not, but they're like so dumb, they're cute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like people describe me. But the show ran for 3 seasons in the early 2000s, but has since produced a movie and a live show. And the band has appeared at Lollapalooza.
No way. The Hot Santa's puppet band?
Yep.
Wouldn't you love to have been there to see it?
I don't know if they sang Caruso Navidad, but maybe they did. I don't know. It returned for a fourth season in 2014 and a Christmas special in 2023. The show had humorous scenes involving members of the news team with explicit and implicit educational messages designed to help children understand complex issues through ridiculous and comedic situations. So they're trying to do good, right? Just like the Muppets, right? Exactly. I mean, they would try to do things. But the song's lyrics describe how hot it is in Chile and how it never snows there for Christmas. The Santas are spending the holiday walking around in their underwear and eating watermelon because of the intense heat.
I think I found my favorite lyrics of that. Santa in his underwear eating watermelon and complaining about no snow. I love that.
It's Christmas dinner. Eat it, eat it,
eat it, eat it. Food they put out for Christmas Eve. Eat it, eat it, eat
it, eat it. Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas. Eat it.
What's up, food for Santa? Eat it. If it's
getting cold, reheat it. There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
I think we need to talk about our silent bites and our, you know, we heard from Lauren a lot of interesting things last time, but I think we need to kind of face the facts here. We need to understand the bold truth. We're not ashamed to admit it. It's about the food and not in a polite way. We need to get in there and we need to dig in elbows deep, full throttle kind of way. We have a respectable justification for appetite now. Like, we just need to embrace this and we need to call it an edible exploration. We are not overeating. We are expanding our cultural horizons. So no more excuses.
I love that, Mark. We're digging in. What'd you say? Elbows deep.
Elbows deep. So what we've discovered in these first few segments is that every dish has two sides. They're sort of the original, you know, and then that's the passed down from grandma version. And then there's the modern jazzed up adaptation made with new ingredients and maybe more healthy options, which is stupid.
We don't like that.
But both have value, right? As a reasonable global leader supporting all phases of ethnic expression and a strong and addictive supporter of the culinary arts, I believe it is our duty to try all versions of pierogi, traditional, non-traditional.
So we get to eat more? Yes, I vote yes.
Way to break it down. As you can imagine, these stuffed bread rolls lend themselves to different interpretations. Latvian families have their own unique recipes, sometimes substituting the fatty bacon and the speckis, or the fatback, with chopped meats like ground beef or ham or chicken, fish, cabbage, pressed cottage cheese, stewed cabbage, or sauerkraut.
Lauren mentioned that pressed cottage cheese. Remember her kid didn't like that?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, she had me when she said her kids love bacon.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know what? If they would have talked about one of those modern versions, I don't think we would have picked it.
Absolutely not.
We want the traditional.
We are traditional men. The bread bacon pies are offered with a variety of fillings and made with yeast dough. The broth bacon pies are made with a flaky pastry butter dough or on a sour cream dough and filled with a boiled beef or cooked fish.
All right. Twist my arm. Maybe I'll have that one.
Yeah. Bob? We got to stay focused and committed. We embark on this meaningful investigation to explore the evolution of the pierogi. We know it's a self-assigned research project, but you know, I think it's like a crusade.
Yes, it's I like that. That's our T-shirts.
Yeah, and we're going to set the rules.
It's a food crusade.
We're setting our own damn rules here too. You might think it's about extra helpings, but understand this is a really important work. Trust me, this is not about just the food. It's about being even-handed. We want to give the old standby and the trendy interpretation equal treatment. We will eat both for fairness, for balance, for seconds.
I feel like I'm at halftime and you're the coach. I want to go out and just eat both of them right now.
I feel like I'm giving...
let me go, coach. Put me out on the field.
I'm giving that speech like movie
You're
miracle.
You're stirring me up.
So join us this season as we present a conventional recipe, but also some of the newer fusion alternatives. We will demonstrate how to prepare both the savory bacon and onion, and the more diverse and unique fillings. All right. Remember that trying both traditional and modern of pierogi is not about gluttony. It's about gratitude. You will thank us. In the great buffet of life, there's no shame and going back for more, especially when it's for research. Pass the pierogi, both kinds, please. And I must say,
it's for research.
It's for research. It's for the kids.
I'm inspired.
Well, you know, it's also amazing. Because you know, I pretend to think like I know how to sing. I found a song that mentions pierogi.
No way. We are learning so much and we're just barely into this.
And so I will give you the Latvian version of the song, and then I'll tell you the words in English too. Are you ready?
Yes.
Zamasaki Sarabagushi. That means Christmas arrived.
Okay.
Rakste Pakamanan in a decorated sleigh. Piragum Nabakan. Oh, that poor bacon pie. Abigala Abagushi. Both ends were burnt.
First off, your elucidation, very, very right on, very targeted, but I can't wait till we can eat these things. And now you've even given us license to eat the new version and the old version.
We are on a mission. You know, Bob, something else happened though this week, I have to tell you.
What?
I joined something this week.
What, like the old retirement school?
No. Everybody wants to feel attached.
Yeah.
You want to feel attached. So there's virtual groups out there with members in. There's a virtual group that like the Phillies, the Flyers, the Vikings, Penn State, and Cary Grove football, right? There's a virtual community currently with three people in it
that
like
say,
all those people. Eric, Brian, and I that like that combination. But what would you say if I told you I found a group of people who love Latvian food, and there's 27,000 of them in this social media platform that I've connected with? I actually had to answer questions.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not.
Well, Mark, we need to hear more about this.
Next episode, day two.
27,000.
27,000 people.
Think they've ever heard of pierogi?
You're not going to get me to give you more information at this time, Bob. I'm just not going to do it. So I think we need to talk about trivia before we go.
It's trivia. Ooh, it's
trivia.
As you said, Chile's a big country, but it's a land of breathtaking extremes, from its icy glaciers to the barren deserts and actually majestic volcanoes to ancient forests.
Now, did you know that? I had no idea there was a desert in Chile. I would never would have thought that. I thought it was more like South America. And I get jungle and I get hot. But the only way I knew about glaciers, a friend of mine climbed the mountain in Antarctica, and you had to leave from Chile. It's the closest place to Antarctica.
The glaciers were complete unknown to me. I would agree with the heat, the volcanoes, and the rainforests, I thought, for sure. But what better way to celebrate this amazing country than to add a bold and eye-catching piece of art to the natural environment?
Like, ooh, yeah,
the Festum Foreign Films fan sticker.
Okay, oh, yes, that's art.
It's your way to show the world that you are more than you appear. You are a lover outdoors, an adventurous spirit, and a connoisseur of holiday cinema from distant shore.
We are sounding academic, aren't we?
Show that you can be the human Chile, a unique and diverse blend of color, contrast, and listener loyalty. Seize the moment and earn your choice of sticker now. But we have to test your knowledge of Chile's amazing natural features. We thought to ask about how ridiculously long the country is, like you mentioned earlier. But if you turn it on its side, stretch from side to side, you'd go from Cape Cod to San Francisco, California.
Think about that. That's our entire width of our country. Oh my gosh.
Or we entertain probing you about Arcia, Chile, which is the driest city in the world, where the surrounding desert has not been rained in over 500 years. Wow. Well, yeah. Grass isn't growing there. We considered asking you about the fact that it has the world's biggest swimming pool.
Oh, that's cool.
15 football fields long with 66 million gallons of seawater. Oh,
can you imagine looking at that?
No. Can you imagine swimming it?
Or how about being the lifeguard?
Oh my God. They only have one. We also wanted to quiz you about Puerto Williams, Chile. That has the purest water in the world. Or how Chile has the world's most active volcanoes with over 1,300. Or that if you measured the height of a mountain from the center of the earth and not from the sea level, that the highest peak on earth would not be Mount Everest, but instead would be the Chimborazo volcano in Chile.
You know what's so odd is we all know Mount Everest. Yeah. I've never even heard of the Chimborazo volcano.
No, I didn't either. But instead, all those things are interesting, but instead we decided to turn to Chile's verdant vino valleys and ask about a certain observatory that creates a peculiar Cabernet Sauvignon by fermenting something unique in its wine. What is it? If it helps, you should consider the source. If you know, email us at festivefans@gmail.com and we will present our little patch of 4F boosterism.
4F so booster-o. Let's see. It's something that's with the wine.
Yep.
And what did they say? It's something mixed with the wine?
It's what they ferment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Before we leave, let me give you a quote. And I thought I was going to keep in the sort of tradition of Chile, right? La familia y los amigos son los verdaderos regalos de Navidad.
That's great. What does it mean?
I'm not going to tell you.
No. Come on. That was really good.
Trying to find out who said this, and it's there's attributed to multiple people, so I'm just going to say nobody, but family and friends are the true Christmas gift.
You know what, honestly? The English doesn't do it justice.
I agree,
it sounded right? So much nicer.
Next episode, we are going to travel to Hong Kong, an area with recent history of dramatic change. A former British colony is now returned to Chinese rule under the one country, two systems, with tighter controls, self-censorship, and much less independence. But what does that mean for Christmas? We'll find out and watch the action thriller from 2019, Bodies at Rest, available for purchase on Amazon. So that's the next one.
All right.
Festive fans, you know how. Festive fans, to listen now. Festive fans, shout with glee. Festive fans. It is season 3.
Oh, nice phone, Mark.
Roses are red, violets are blue.
It's time to go.
I'm going
to
say good night to you. Good night, Bob.
Good night, Mark.
Actually, we're done.
Done.
It's over. Over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
Sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.